It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. I'm Ben Ostra. I'm joined by, from the Football Zebras crew, Mark Schultz, Pat Weber, and Cam Philippe. And we are deep in postseason right now for the college football playoffs. We're just entering the wild card playoffs in the NFL, so we have games that are meaning a lot of to a lot of players and to officials as well. So we're going to just jump right in. And well, I'll start with you, Pat, and we'll take a look in the NFL and let me know what stood out for you this week.
Yeah, there were a couple instances of players contacting officials. In the Colts game, we had Colts receiver Alec Pierce ejected for contacting official Jabir Walker. There's a little controversy surrounding this one, as there wasn't a ton of contact, but one thing that Pierce does is, there's an incomplete pass, and he wants a pass interference foul, and he comes over to argue in Walker's face, really in an intimidating gesture. So he's really on the hook for any contact that happens, even if it's not the biggest, most egregious thing in the world. I mean, there could be the argument that it was slight enough that maybe you just want unsportsmanlike conduct for Pierce's intimidating actions. But at the end of the day, he's responsible for putting himself in the, even in the area code of the official, where he accidentally hits the official, and then that's a problem. On the flip side, on Myles Garrett's record-breaking sack, one of the other defensive linemen high-fived the referee coming with a dead ball signal. And while as an official, we don't want that to happen because of the optics it gives, that is a far cry from the intimidating actions that Pierce had. And that's why you don't see any penalties for the Browns player.
Right. And so you have somebody that's exuberant. He comes out of the sack, or comes out of the collection of players there. And he sees somebody approaching him with his hand in the air. And, it was just a reaction in that way. Or, might be something on a touchdown where you hand the ball to the official and you give him a tap or something like that. Cam, let me toss it over to you.
Yeah, so end of the regular season, moving into the postseason. That means we're on retirement watch for NFL officials, and we actually know of four that put in their papers prior to the season. And 107 combined years of service will be leaving the field at the end of the season. We have Rick Patterson, Boris Cheek, each in their 30th season currently. Also, 20-year deep wing Terry Brown and 27-year line of scrimmage official Tom Steffen. So those four are wrapping it up at the end of this season. We may see more. These are the ones we know at this time. And like I had just said, Rick Patterson and Boris Cheek are both members of the illustrious 30 Club, and very, very small number of officials have reached that. They are number 8 and 9 officials total in NFL history have worked 30 or more seasons. They may not have worked their last game. They can still work into the postseason as early as this upcoming weekend, wildcard weekend, or all the way to the Super Bowl, possibly. Tom Steffen, I know, is working a game this weekend. He will be working the 49ers-Eagles game, and we'll get more information on assignments a little later. But this is, a time where we are saying goodbye to, a lot of really tenured, a lot of assignments, a lot of postseason assignments combined between these four officials. And, we may see more, like I said, as the offseason progresses, but we, wish them well. They put in a lot of time, like I said, 107 combined seasons, and, Godspeed to them at the end of their officiating careers. And before you know it, we'll get to know who the new officials are coming in during the off season.
And it's rare not only to get an official that has put in 30 years, but we also had two of them on the field at the same time. And it's only the third season that that has happened. And I'll kind of put you on the spot there, Cam, because you're the resident officiating trivia expert. So the other two times were, did I stump you? And it's a bit of a trick question too.
Yeah. So the one that comes to mind is Ben Dreith and Jim Tunney, who worked through 1990, each in their 31st year. That's the one that's coming to me. Go ahead.
Right. And then of course the second one would be the 30th season, the year before, for both of them.
There you go.
So that's where the trick question is. I'm overloaded with some Ben Dreith trivia, so I wanted to make sure I got that in. Also, the only official to have worked on the field for two double overtime games, Ben Dreith. So you can impress some people at your next bar outing with some of that. Let me throw it over to Mark there. See if he's got anything for us trivia-wise.
Oh, I've got a lot of trivia, but I'll talk first about the college football playoff. I'll go into college. And it was a remarkably quiet weekend and a quiet New Year's on the officiating front. The college football playoff games, the New Year's Six bowls, they all were pretty absent of officiating controversy. Now, some people are going to say, well, the officials swallow their whistles and the bosses say, don't call anything except attempted murder out on the field. You can't, you know, don't be part of the game. You can't do that. Well, I would tip my cap to the teams and the coaches for being well-disciplined and well-prepared to play those bowl games. You don't win 10, 11, 12 games in a season by playing undisciplined football. Undisciplined football is you clutch and grab and hold. You get jumpy on the line and you false start. Or you lose your composure and taunt an opponent and late hit and draw personal fouls. That's undisciplined. These teams, in order to win so many football games, have to play disciplined football. And I tip my cap to them, and they know going into those games, do we want to go to the semifinal? Well, let's bite our tongue and not mouth off at an opponent after we beat him. And that other guy has been driving me crazy. Let me not stomp on his head. Let me not create a personal foul and hurt my team. Have my team lose 15 yards and maybe me out for the game. Let's play with discipline. So I tip my cap again to the teams and the coaches for playing well-disciplined football. And because they played well-disciplined football, the officials weren't part of the story.
And let's expand that out. We'll talk about the 15 quarters and 14 minutes and 59 seconds of college football, the playoffs, and but more broadly, into the point where, yeah, we see that in these bowl games. We do see it in the NFL. And I'm sure we've seen it in some of the local games, and there's probably situations where you have had a matchup that's coming up, and it's a playoff game that's going to be pretty big, and you're gearing yourself up for a game, and it's smooth sailing. So take us to the field on these games where it looks like you've got the game of your life in front of you, and it's an easy paycheck.
I remember one game. It was my first semifinal high school playoff game. We were down in East St. Louis. That's a perennial powerhouse. They had about half dozen players that were going to be playing the next season on big teams. University of Tennessee, Texas Tech, Missouri. I mean, these aren't slouch programs that they're going to go play for. And I was getting ready for a big game. It's like, man, what is going to happen here? That team and the other team were so smooth. It was an easy game to work, and it was a joy to work. I watched them complete passes. It's like, you see that on TV. And I thought to myself, well, they're going to be playing on TV next year. That's why we're seeing such good plays. And I was so charged up. It's like, man, this is the game of my life. I've got to be really on it now with all these great players out here. And it was great. I walked off with such a feeling of happiness and satisfaction. I loved that game. If I could have 9 games a season like that, I'd be happy.
Yeah, I think some of the biggest jitters are until that opening kickoff happens, or, you know, the first pitch or the opening tip, until whatever sport you're doing. But a few minutes in, it's just another game. And the reality is the players are tuned in for that game. They're not going to want to cost their team with a cheap foul, with the garbage that happens between plays. And it makes it a little easier to officiate play to play when you don't have to do some of the dead ball officiating you might have to do. I shouldn't say you don't have to do it, but you don't have to do some of the more babysitting aspects of it that you get in some of the games that get out of hand in the regular season.
And Cam, I think you had your championship game, your state championship. I think you threw one flag and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. That's exactly what I was going to bring up, because not only that, but that game the year prior, it was the only game out of the 8 divisions in Massachusetts having each their own championship game, the only one where the 2 teams that were in the championship had played each other in the regular season. They're in the same, league, the same division. And so it was a rematch of an earlier game that year. I didn't have the first edition of that game, but I just went to look it up, and it was a 14 to 10 game. And we were expecting, these teams know each other. It's not like, and I've explained this ad nauseum before, it's not like a team from the tip of Cape Cod versus western border with New York, which is what it's like in Massachusetts playoffs. I've explained this before. These 2 teams know each other, bordering towns, same league, 14 to 10 game the first time they played, and we're ready for anything. We're ready for anything. And not only did I only throw one flag, I think as a crew collectively, we had, I believe, less than 8, and it was a 35-0 game. So I always like to say, when I'm white hatting, or even when I'm not, and I just get on the 0-2-0 and or during a timeout, I'll say to the members of my crew, I'll just say, listen, we can only work the game that's in front of us. All the preparation in the world is not going to tell us what's going to happen on each play, what's going to happen after each play. So not saying that preparation isn't important, because it's critical. You can't go onto the field without any preparation, but you can't prepare for those specifics of knowing what you're going to see or how the game is going to play out. That one we expected a really low scoring defensive bloodbath, chippiness, got none of it. So like I always say, you can only work the game that's in front of you.
And so that's what we saw for the college football playoffs. We'd go to the game that never would end, and that was the Sugar Bowl, where we had 1 second on the clock interminably. What wound up setting it up was a lateral that wasn't fielded, so that's a backwards pass that goes into a pylon, and everybody says, safety, let's go home. And the replay official radios down and says, hey, we have to take a look at this because we might have time on the clock. So again, it now falls on the officials to now tell everybody, get to your sidelines. In the back of my head, I had the voice of Joe Starkey, the Cal announcer, and saying, the stage is on the field. And so they pulled that stage out, twice, 3 times, and pushed her right back on the sideline again. It was one of the most comical endings. And it wound up boomeranging to the officials. It's like, well, why don't you have control of the game? And the one thing that stuck in my mind was Sean McDonough, the ESPN announcer, saying, doesn't common sense prevail? So let me send that out to you guys. Does common sense prevail?
Well, I had to stand up and applaud at that moment, because Sean McDonough can at times get a little snarky when it comes to officiating. And he started to say, oh, this game's not going to end. Matt Austin, doesn't common sense prevail? And Matt Austin said, well, yes, but we have rules and they must be followed. So that was the main idea there. And yes, it would have been easier just to say, that's game, we're walking off the field. But the rules state that you have to, follow the rules. And if there's time still on the clock, we have to have one more play. it kind of reminded me of the 2017 miracle in Minneapolis when the Vikings, on just an absolute miracle last play, beat the Saints, went in for a touchdown. The extra point was not needed. The Vikings had scored enough points to win. But by rule at that time, the NFL said, we have to have a try for point. And Steratore said, we have to certify the end of the game. We must have the try for point. And everybody said, oh, why are you doing that? It's over. They won. Well, the rules say we have to finish it the right way and give a gold star to the Sugar Bowl officiating crew for ending it the right way.
Yeah, there's always some fun on onside kicks. Special teams lead to special plays. We always kind of say that. The NCAA is a little bit different than the NFL. I know in the NFL, the clock never starts until the receiving team touches it. In NCAA, the clock starts when the ball is legally touched, regardless of which team touches it. However, if the ball is cleanly caught in a situation where it becomes dead by rule, as in the kicking team player is on the ground and he recovers it, then no time runs. So they were correct in keeping 1 second on the clock. If Ole Miss was a little more prepared, I guess would be the way to put it, all they have to do is touch the ball there, and that second goes away no matter what happens.
And that comes to a point also, and we've seen it at all levels, Cam, is that on kicking plays, you got to know your rules as a player. So special teams players have to be especially aware of the rules that affect their unit.
So that also speaks a lot to the special teams coaching. And a lot of times you'll be able to tell which coaching staffs, and I can only speak obviously at the high school level, but even still at the high school level, you can tell a lot of times what teams really focus in on special teams coaching compared to the ones that don't. And we always like to say, stuff happens on kicks, and stuff is a filler for another word. But that's where craziest things can happen. And, a lot of times you may think, oh, I've got everything covered, but then there's always going to be some strange circumstance that pops up. And it always makes it a little easier sometimes when there's really good special teams coaching and, the teams they know what they're expecting and they're able to work through it as well as you on the field in case something comes up. So yeah, the kicking game is where the fun stuff happens. Not the best stuff, but the fun stuff in a loose way.
And runs tend to be very predictable. Passes tend to follow a trajectory. But for whatever reason, once a foot hits that ball, then all sorts of things happen. They bounce funny. They do all sorts of things. And that's where all of these rules come into play. And we wind up with situations I find kind of funny where we say what the ruling is and everybody say, that's a complicated rule. Why did that come up? And it's basically comes back to the rule. A kick is a kick until possessed. And when you do that and compartmentalize things that way, everything just falls into that bucket and it just makes it easier to officiate. So actually the rule is much more simple. It's just that it covers all of these weird situations very neatly and concisely. When you start stacking on all sorts of exceptions, now you're going to have conferences on the field and trying to unravel that. A kick is a kick until it's not a kick. Well, okay, then that's what happened. And it's unfortunate that they did roll off a second. I was watching the Skycast and I could see the wing official did roll that 1 second off the clock in error, but they put it on quickly. But other than that, you're handling that situation where it's like everybody wants to get home. Let's just call this, stop inserting yourself in the game. It's like, no. And as Matt Austin said, that's the bulletin board material for us officials, I guess, is to, the rules that are rules and we must follow them. In the few minutes we have left, we have our first set of NFL postseason assignments for 2025. We're waiting around for them. Monday morning into the afternoon and just kind of tapping our fingers on the desk and bang, there they were. So Cam, I'll let you give us a little bit of insight into what we had today.
Sure. So just running them off very quickly from the top, we're going to have Cleet Blakeman in Carolina, Adrian Hill in Chicago, Brad Allen in Jacksonville, Alan Eck working his first game as a referee, his first postseason game as a referee, I should say, in Philadelphia. Ron Torbert, last year's Super Bowl official, will be in New England. and Craig Rolstad will wrap it up on Monday in Pittsburgh. And, you know, just a couple of things to point out. We have two officials this weekend working their first playoff game. Down judge Brian Sikowski will be on Adrian Hill's crew in Chicago. And we also have line judge Brett Bergman working with Craig Rolstad in Pittsburgh. Bergman, the son of retired line judge Jeff Bergman and grandson of the late, great Jerry Bergman Sr. They will be working their first playoff games. This is the first year since 2022 that we have not had any second-year officials working in the first round. Doesn't mean that there won't be any in the divisional round, but first time in a few years we haven't seen any two-year officials breaking in the first round of the postseason. Going back to, you know, we do our predictions every year. If you didn't get a chance to look at that, please do so. It's always a fun little game we play every year. You know, there are some officials we're expecting to see in this round. Some we thought would be higher. Like I said, Ron Torbert was last year's Super Bowl referee. I will just say I slotted him in the wild card round. This is the fourth year in a row now. The Super Bowl referee the following year worked a wild card game. I was predicting that pattern would come true again, would continue for another year, and it did. And I'm glad I made that pick. But it always comes down to it's not a question of we don't have enough good officials to fill the playoff spots. It's actually quite the opposite. We have too many officials to fill a small number of spots, even with the expanded wildcard playoff round that has been in effect since 2020. But one other thing I wanted to point out to illustrate that is line judge Jeff Seaman. He'll be working in Philadelphia this weekend. He is coming off of a string of five consecutive AFC championship games. He has worked every AFC championship game since 2020. And barring any assigning rule changes, that streak will break this year. Does that mean he had a step down this year? We don't know. We don't see the grades. But we're always trying to see, or the officiating department is always trying to get in the best officials that are on the roster. Ramon George has made this clear. He's going to put his best officials out there. He proved that to us by putting in two 30-year officials in the Super Bowl last year. So, you know, does it mean that there's better officials out there? Possibly. It also just means that there aren't enough spots at the top. So I'm very happy to see these assignments. You know, we got a lot of deserving officials, both newer on the newer side and some, you know, strong veterans working this first round.
So you mentioned Jeff Seaman, and that game is 49ers-Eagles, and that's what, a 3 seed versus a 6, I guess. And so, you know, that's going to be a highly contested game. Mark, you told us to put a pin in 2 versus 7. You were anticipating Chicago and Green Bay, and well, we got it. And so we put on that crew, or we have on that crew, Adrian Hill, Dwayne Haight, Brian Sikowski, as we mentioned, Carl Johnson, Jeff Shears, at field judge Alan Baines, and Todd Prukop. What do you think?
That's some good experience out there, and they're going to need it. It's going to be a very, very high emotion game. The energy from the crowd is going to be amazing. Both teams just do not like each other. The coaches don't like each other, and it's going to be quite a game. Both sidelines are going to be working the officials every play, so the officials are going to be more mentally tired than physically tired at the end of this game. I think there's a good crew, and I think they'll be able to work a good, strong game.
And Pat, I got a minute left, so let me go to the alternates there. Clay Martin, Barry Anderson, Brian Bollinger, Eugene Hall, and Martin Hankins. They're going to be playing a very important role in this game. Of course, same with the other games as well, but specifically on this game, they're going to be pressed into service as well.
Yeah, absolutely. They're going to be, you get that extra set of eyes, an extra set of help to be with the coaches, help that sideline communication. It's going to be a tough game, high intensity. I mean, every playoff game is, but this is going to be turn up to 11. This is only the third time, I believe, that the Bears and Packers have met in the playoffs, and everyone's going to want it real bad, and the officials are going to have to be on top of their game.
And all that history behind that and all funneling into this game, and it's win and in and out you go if you lose. And we actually saw that with with the final game of the regular season. It was very much a playoff game. And so we've got some football ahead of us. And we'll be here every week with Football Zebras Podcast. I'm Ben Ostro. Thanks to Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, and Pat Weber. We'll catch you next time.